Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly podcast. I am Eric Cohn, joined as always by Ann Thompson. We are usually split across two coasts of this fine country, but right now we're both in Los Angeles, though still on Zoom because it's easier to pull things that way. But still, nice to be in town with you, Ann, and see
I'm going to see you later. There's a little gathering that we're going to join each other on. And tomorrow you've got your big, on Friday, you have your big shorts event, which I will definitely attend.
Very excited about that, and then get your feedback on which ones you respond to and so forth. But first, we have a lot to discuss, from Avatar to the Sundance lineup, and of course that we saved democracy by sending postcards to Georgia.
It was absolutely up to us. And there was, I have to tell you, I sent my postcards to Winnick County, which had some explosive growth in participation.
I'm sure it was your fine handwriting. Did you do cursive? Or
I think you ended up sending more postcards than I did, I'll confess.
Oh, I sent one batch of 50 that was very satisfying, but I got a real weird look from somebody when I just dumped them all in the mailbox. I mean, look, I would have liked to make more calls this time. I think they're the most effective, but everything makes a difference. I mean, even in this case, it was so damn close. It should not be that close.
It's very disturbing. Yeah. And thank God Stacey Abrams had the apparatus in place to make sure that there was a free and fair election.
Way to go. I will say this. So I came out of Avatar, which we should talk about, as this was happening. And it was really fascinating because it was like, here's a movie which we'll talk about, which is certainly invested in, you know, eco issues and has a sort of not a political agenda per se, but a certain worldview. And then to come out of that and thinking, I was thinking about some of the ideology in the movie, and then seeing this happen, and I was just like, I'm constantly living in like a struggle to keep the world in some sort of positive place. You know, it's just like a never-ending battle from Avatar to the Georgia runoff.
But there's a lot of nasty stuff heading Donald Trump's way. He's in deep doo-doo.
That is true. He's like the villain of Avatar.
There's good news coming down the pike along with all the horrible stuff. So
like the villain in Avatar keeps coming back, and we won't spoil too much about that. But I mean, there's something
in more ways than one. Yeah. Well, Stephen Lang is in the movie, so we know that there's something going on there. But no, I think it's okay to say that Stephen Lang comes back as an avatar, basically.
That's an avatar himself.
And that's the very beginning of the movie. And there's a group of them that land on Pandora. And we start in the forest of Pandora, where we left our beautiful couple. And they keep having children. And there's some mysterious children that arrive. One of them comes out of the avatar of Sigourney Weaver, which I found very strange and mysterious. Did you explain that to me, Eric?
Well, first of all, I don't know how Sigourney Weaver had a kid, but it gave.
They keep talking about who's the father. And then there's this thing with the hands, with the human hands. I think he wanted some kind of disability trope to be in the movie.
Maybe. I didn't really overthink it too much because I don't consider Cameron to be the most nuanced writer, and
he likes to cover lots of audience bases.
I thought that the Sigourney thing, and this isn't spoiling anything, it's setting something in motion. We know that the third film is already shot and part of a fourth one's been shot, so there's like a whole broader narrative arc about what's going on here that presumably has some kind of payoff. It's not fully resolved, but I will say, whatever the logic is, pretty cool to see Sigourney Weaver play.
She's great. She's playing really a teenager.
Totally
convincing. It's beautifully done. Beautifully done.
Yeah, and it's like the de-aging thing. Kitty. Like, we see de-aging everywhere. Now Harrison Ford's de-aging the new Indiana Jones, but it's not that.
She's an avatar. Like, she's a different character, but it looks like Sigourney Weaver, a young teenage Sigourney Weaver. There's no problem with it. And she's one of the ones who adapt. So they have to leave Pandora to go, and they land you know, they fly to this water world. And
well, they didn't leave Pandora. It's the planet, right? They have to leave their like forest.
Their forest area. Thing. Yeah. Right. And so, correct. And so, because they're under attack from Stephen Lang and his mighty warriors. And they're who are adapting. You know, one of my favorite scenes, Stephen Lang is often used for some kind of comic relief. He's actually very funny in the movie also. And there's human elements to him. There's a great bonding. What are the names of the dragons that they fly? I guess they're dragons. They fly. Yeah.
They're essentially dragons.
They have to bond with them and put the little
hair in the hole. Not sensual at all.
And he he fights his, and you know they think he's a goner, and then he wrestles his to submission. There's a lot. The thing about this movie, it moves it so fast. There's so much invention, so much. It's like RRR in a way that you're just marveling at the cinematic.
Oh, yeah.
Invention.
I think it's a great point
it's
of comparison.
Coming at you all the time, the choreography, the mechanics, the technology, but in the use in service of a great story and a lot of good characters, a great family at the center.
Particularly clear. And again, don't want to spoil anything more than whatever you've just said, but I think it's a much better story than the last one, which had, you know, visually was astounding. I thought narratively was okay. It was a good premise. And then I kind of was less invested overall in the kind of the romance and this, as the stakes rose in that movie, I found them to be less involving. But in this one, it almost laid the foundation for what happens in this one, which is that you have a real family dynamic and the stakes of death with a family dynamic and
protecting the family.
They're
under attack.
The real protector? There's a critique, I think, on some level of like that kind of macho alpha male energy to do that, which is very much like almost like James Cameron looking in the mirror.
He's been talking about that. He's been saying in interviews that his own family was something of an inspiration for what he is tangling with his children in this in a very believable and accessible way that made a lot of sense. And also the idea that you would, you know, just imagine James Cameron as a father. He's not around. He's workaholic central. And he comes home and lays down the law, you know, and his children, he says this, that his children revolted.
Yeah.
Know?
I mean, it's like in the time you might be able to take a vacation, this dad hops in a submarine and goes to the bottom of the world. You know, it's like, well,
all right. So all that underwater exploration that Cameron really did. And I have so much admiration for him.
Comes to the fore. Yeah.
James Cameron, explorer, scientist side of him, he brings it to bear. I mean, the three Oscars that Avatar won last time, they got 9 nominations, including picture and director. But the three that they won were cinematography, visual effects, and art direction,
right?
Now called production design.
And it was not nominated for any performances.
No. And that's not going to happen again because the Academy is biased against performance capture. I think Zoe Saldana is particularly good in this.
I think the Sigourney Weaver, that would have been in another year. Of course, I mean, what's the conversation about it?
But they're not even up to the idea. You and I have talked about whether Pinocchio could get into Best Picture. The reality is that so many people don't even watch the animated films. You know, even if it is Guillermo del Toro.
And they put them in a box and they think about them in a certain kind of way.
And live action actors are very biased against this kind of, it isn't voice work. These are real performances. It's the same as what Caesar in the Planet of the Apes movie.
Andy Serkis.
He's one of the great
actors. And eventually he'll probably get some kind of trophy for it. But, you know, it's fascinating you bring this up as an aside. I went to a Pinocchio dinner because Guillermo del Toro has been making the rounds in New York. There's a MoMA exhibit.
He's been making the rounds everywhere.
He doesn't sleep. And had, this was a few nights before Avatar. And of course, you know, these guys like lived together at one point in the 90s. They've been buddies forever.
Cameron bailed out his father.
He paid $1 million to get his father when he was kidnapped in Guadalajara a long time ago. He'd seen Avatar and he said something like, if my life was on the line and someone said, you have to direct some of the sequences in this movie, I couldn't, you know, obviously biased. But
what you're,
to do that.
what you're saying is what I think very few people realize. And I'm an amateur. I mean, I've been tracking Cameron's technological advances all these years as best I can. It's extraordinary what this took to do this underwater stuff, to create all of this from scratch. It's like Jungle Book. It's the same concept. It's you are creating the world completely from scratch.
Right. My eyes, like I was watching this and I was like, again, I did this in 2009, but it's even more pronounced this time where you're like, I can't even fully process what I'm looking at right now. Some of the frame rate stuff bugged me, but just the textures.
I didn't notice it at all. Where did you notice the frame rate?
There are a few moments that almost looked like it was like happening in slow motion or you're looking at a flip book. I can't fully describe it. Maybe it was a disconnect with how it was being projected. I don't have the technical wherewithal to fully describe it. And I think this is going to be ongoing. These are very brief moments. But I was cognizant of it. And I'm definitely cognizant of the frame rate at the start because it looks different. It looks like, you know, you're watching a football game or something on a really good TV, but you adjust to that. And that's not as big of an issue.
I feel like I saw it at a better theater than you did.
It could be. I saw it at the 42nd Street IMAX, which is not the real IMAX in New York City. That's the full specs is the one up
I saw it at
uptown.
The AMC 15. It was stunning. It was unbelievable. You just are completely immersed from the beginning. But you know that moment in the first Avatar where you're suddenly wandering around Pandora in the forest and you see the magic sprites and you're looking at there's a moment. Everyone knows where that moment
all the neon
is
stuff.
And you see the beauty. You just see the extraordinary beauty that you bliss out, you know, and that's what people respond to so, you know, strongly about being inside the Pandora world. That's why the movie's so big all over the world. That's why it's the number one movie of all time. This has those moments too, underwater. And you feel this bliss. You just feel this. There's moments where there's a whale-like creature that he bonds, one of the kids bonds with. His name is Britton Dalton. He's one of the best of the kids. I thought he was extraordinarily good.
No, all the underwater stuff. I mean, we know that they get so much good press for this. James Cameron saying, why do you shoot in water instead of doing it with CG? Because it just looks better. But it does make the case for that. I mean, you're really seeing actors swimming around in tanks and stuff and holding their breath.
Kate Winslet got a kick out of it. Now she plays the matriarch of the sea family, the water world family, and it's not that big a part. I was a little surprised that
I know
there
was a little overhyped. Well, I mean, maybe she just wanted in on that world, or
she enjoyed doing the athletics.
I talked about that missing Blockbuster New York Times article last week. I mean,
I read it and I really disagree with it.
Well, but one thing it does remind you is that just that Cameron's been taking his time on this, and who knows how different kinds of roles have evolved with time too.
And her role may be bigger in the next one.
Right. We don't know what
she's powerful.
Playing.
You see that it's somebody that like Kate Winslet playing that part, but it's not that big a part.
Right.
Anyway, the story is riveting, and you follow everything. But what you have is the encroachment, the rapacious warriors coming in with their machines, and you have this extraordinary duality, you know, the organic beauty and peaceful, blissful nature world and the machines.
Well, there's a moment where, I mean, some of the stuff is kind of on the notes, but I did appreciate that these whale creatures you mentioned are really established as kind of characters, and then they're treated as animals by the humans, because it was one of the clearer attempts I'd seen, at least on this scale, to show. I mean, we've seen films like Blackfish, right, that show you that whales are intelligent creatures, but this is a film like within a fictional science fiction context is like, here are some real sentient beings you can actually identify with or realize have, you know, feelings like your own, and here's how people treat them. And that is an animal rights argument in a nutshell. And I thought that was really interesting that this is playing as a huge blockbuster that could make billions of dollars, and it has an argument like that at its core. That's really cool. I think it is a political movie in that
sense. It is a political movie. I think you should be able to say that. It definitely is. And he's a... it's going to be huge. I describe a tsunami of box office, you know, but the idea is that people will go back to be in this world. 3 hours is nothing. They're going to want to be there again. And the other aspect of this, I don't know if people remember that James Cameron actually wrote the screenplay for Rambo Part Two. You know, he is he's the kind of guy who knows how to establish all the weapons at the beginning, and you know, knows how to put people in. You know, he look at the
there is a formula
aliens movies.
To this.
He knows how to put. You know, he knows how to do war. He knows how to do battles.
And,
you know?
And there's a Western element as well.
And he knows how to blow shit up and get a kick out of all the stuff flying around.
Yeah, and some of that I did get tired of, but then the last kind of showdown is really intense.
Well, this is where Titanic comes in.
There's a Titanic element. Oh, we can't spoil it. We're not going to spoil it. But it is really intense. And I was thinking, like, Jaws made you afraid to go in the water. This one will just like give you a more complicated relationship to it. You know, it's like, it's everything. It's the scary stuff. It's the beautiful stuff. It's the ecosystem and so forth. So the other thing about that Times article though, is it touches on this whole subculture of people who like want to live on Pandora.
That's what I was referring to before. Yeah. That is an argument against the point that this guy was making, which is that it had no cultural resonance.
That guy says the author of that article finds somebody who's
such
said,
a bias, know, Eric.
Well, but hold on. But I'm saying there's somebody in the article who's like, yeah, I really am invested in the fantasy of Pandora, but the movie is not as interesting to me or whatever. But I feel like this one continues, like so much time has passed between the first Avatar and the second one, and this one feels like a more fleshed out universe. So it can go a lot further in terms of getting people invested in the stakes of Pandora, because there will now be more Pandora movies in a more immediate future. So there could be another generation of people who get into Avatar in a much more intense way.
There was only one Avatar. There never was a multiverse. It didn't exist.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And exactly. The MCU was just like Iron Man and like a not great.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So it was a different era in that sense. Well,
as far as the Oscars go, I think it'll get about 6 nominations, including picture and director. So, and it's also going to go up against Black Panther in a lot of
the
craft
good
categories.
Showdown, though.
No, that the, is this really, is this. I think it trumps Black that. Panther in a big way, unfortunately.
Well, but I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. What about for say for Ruth in production design? She already won, so that gives.
But
her
I would say Avatar. You know, Black Panther can't compete with Avatar in those categories. I just don't see it. Maybe
I'll
costumes.
Be curious to see how
I bet Ruth Carter gets costumes.
There
that's where it could happen.
Right.
But costumes. Yeah. But yeah. then there's a sort of weekend song at the end, you know, and there
that was not my favorite of the original songs. LCD sound system and White Noise. I just saw them last week. It was great. They did the song from White Noise and it was so good live. They're doing a whole residency at Brooklyn Steel. I really hope they get in. That category is super competitive now. Sure. We got Lady Gaga, we got Rihanna, all kinds of stuff going on there. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And we've got Pinocchio in there too.
And we've got Pinocchio. So speaking of ginormous blockbusters, why don't we talk about the Sundance lineup that dropped this week? Because that also matters.
So I looked it over, and it is what it always is. It's a lot of, there's an enormous, what is it, 26 first-time filmmakers or something, you know?
With more than that, it's 28% of the lineup, which is 30-something, I believe. Yeah. It's actually less first-time filmmakers than before, but of course, the last 2 years of Sundance have been wholly virtual, and this is the first in-person one. So they also need those bigger, some, you know, higher profile kinds of films. And there will be that aspect to the environment that you didn't really get with the virtual festival, because it was all just a bunch of stuff you watched at home. Having said that, one thing that we know is going to happen with Sundance this year is that the virtual will happen 5 days into the festival.
That's right. I'm glad they're still doing that.
So that, and most festivals, by the way, bigger festivals,
they
have
don't.
Way. They're not into that. Sundance captured audiences in all 50 states. I know that this is controversial in the industry, just talking to some distributors who are not.
There's some, Eric, you interviewed them, so you can argue with me. But as I understand it, there's some wriggle room for films that already have distribution in terms of how many times they're going to be shown. There's what I understand is that there was a very complex negotiation that went on behind the scenes for each and every one of these films.
Well, and
for the ones without distribution, it was easier.
Well, you can see it, but I mean, it seems that the one line in the sand was that films in the competition sections had to be.
Yeah.
So by and large, those are not films with distribution, and they are largely from first-time filmmakers. I think this is going to be an ever-evolving thing. People who are watching Sundance at home don't necessarily need to have access to every movie that plays like Gangbusters and Echoes to be able to see some good Sundance movies. So that element of access is important, whether or not you open the floodgates to the whole competition versus just an opt-in kind of a thing. I think a lot of films do benefit if they're smaller in different sections. The next section, for example, to me, is like a great section to make available to people in 50 states, because that's like where the edgier stuff is and the discoveries and so forth. But then some people think you just want that small Sundance audience to start the life of a movie. A handful of critics write about your movie, and that exclusivity then informs what comes next. So this is a whole conversation that's unfolding now. And I don't think there's one specific solution.
Right.
But
I'm glad they're holding the line. They had to fight for it, is my point. Yeah. It wasn't easy. So for example, I would imagine that audiences tuning into Sundance, and I love the idea that anybody can just sign up, you know, and people should. It's wonderful.
You can buy
a
pass for like
go in there and
bucks.
Watch whatever you want.
And then, yeah, I think if you buy a $25 pass, and then not to shill, but then you can like buy individual tickets, you know, follow coverage like ours and buy a couple of tickets, and you
the
can
buzz builds.
Yeah.
Exactly right. But there's a movie that, for example, I'm really interested in seeing, the Nicole Hall of Center, which is one of the highest profile films in the festival. You Hurt My Feelings with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tobias Menzies.
Right.
Where there's a marriage in trouble because she overhears her husband saying what he really thinks of her book. This is a great premise.
It's really funny. Because you know how
I want to see that film.
She's a great writer. I mean, she worked with Julia on Enough Said, and that was, you know, a really
very successful movie.
I'm very much looking for a lot of the bigger movies look good. I mean, there's a film called Magazine Dreams that stars Jonathan Majors, and of course he broke out at Sundance with Last Black Man in San Francisco, and now
exactly.
He's a star. And he plays a bodybuilder. Images, this performance looks intense. I know buyers are going to be tracking it. And that's exciting. I'm excited about Brandon Cronenberg's new movie.
That looks very commercial to me.
This is a guy who has been making wild, crazy movies like his father while working towards getting out of his father's shadow. Like, his first couple movies felt a bit imitative, even if he didn't like talking about
they were in the horror genre.
Yeah, they were in the body horror genre in a very explicit way, and as far as I can tell, they still are. But Infinity Pool does look, I mean, with Mia Goth doing some crazy stuff and Alexander Skarsgård, it's like it just looks like a movie that could have a real kind of life. And I'm sure Neon is thrilled about, you know, being able to continue his other films were Sundance films too. So there's a continuity there that I think is kind of great. And part of the reason why a festival like Sundance remains really valuable, even if the future of the movies as a business proposition in theaters, et cetera, is still wide open. And it's hard to know who's going to spend money at Sundance.
Well, Netflix already did. I mean, they picked up this documentary called The Deepest Breath. It's about the deep sea diving. It looks like it's in the genre of the Free Solo, say. You know,
sure.
Only this time and, we're back in the water.
Yeah, right. And people who are seeing Avatar are you know, looking for their water fix, and then they turn on the lights. So, you know,
but this is, you know, the festival hasn't even started yet, and the acquisitions are already,
I mean, they're showing 12
and docs are often the hottest titles there.
Yeah, and they still could be. I mean, there's a doc on Little Richard that looks really good, dealing with him as sort of an underappreciated queer icon. There's a Michael J. Fox documentary, which Apple already has, but a whole bunch of stuff like that. I'm really curious about a doc that's opening the next section on Kim's Video, because that's a crazy story and it looks really weird, honestly.
One may not be one of the ones, but what always happens every year at Sundance is that the future Oscar contenders are often quite a few of them.
They have a good
launch
track
at Sundance.
Exactly.
It's very hard to get into the doc competition.
Yeah. No, but what I was going to say before is there are, so you remember those days when there was that opening night film stigma. It was like one film played on opening night, and it was usually like not the best movie of the festival. And
they have 11, I think.
Well, yeah, technically it's 12 because of the short films. There's like, you have like a dozen options on opening night, in addition to this fundraiser where like Ryan Coogler and Nikiatu Jusu and W. Kamau Bell are being honored. So it's like Sundance is just going to like start with like just a flirt. You're just, I won't even know where to look. And that kind of like overwhelming sense, you know, we get that when we've gone to Cannes the last 2 years, but we haven't had that at a major US festival of this scale. And so it's, I keep saying when people are like, well, what do you think is going to happen? You know, I think it's like the wrong question. It's more like, what happens once Sundance happens? Because we
well,
just
I think it will be a petri dish for viruses, well, is what okay. I think.
There's that. But you know what? People have been getting sick at Sundance for decades, right?
This is an honorable tradition. And now we know how to wear masks.
God yeah, exactly. If we had been wearing masks beforehand, we would have had an easier time crowding into those condos. And of course, I mean, we're all going to be there with at the parties. And you can't just go to Sundance and not. And just watch movies. I mean, even when I remember my first year I went and I was seeing things at 8 a.m., seeing things at midnight, but somehow I was squeezing in, you know.
You and me both, kid.
Yeah, it's unavoidable. And that's a unique ecosystem you cannot replicate online. As much as I am a VR evangelist, and I hope that New Frontier comes back.
Yeah.
You tried it out last time, I remember, and you were able to appreciate.
I was wandering like a lonely avatar.
Yeah. Well, I hope that.
I wasn't the belle of the party, trust me.
We'll try it again, so I'll get you into another platform at some point. Anyway, Anne, so I will see you at our event on Friday, and then we'll catch up next week because we got a big topic to discuss, and that is, of course, our favorite movies of the year. All the top 10 lists are dropping left and right. We're working
all
on
the arcane New York Times 10 best lists.
You love that word. I like that. I think it's a you advocate for stuff people haven't.
No,
heard
I'm
of.
Happy to look at movies I may not have seen, you know, but when there's so many of them on this is A.O. Scott. When there's so many of them on one list, you just have to go, come on, guy, you know, give us something that maybe somebody has seen.
You have plausible deniability in that context as a critic, because if you haven't seen it, who's to say what these things are? And of course, nobody's seen Avatar yet. Most lists that might have included Avatar don't, because they've run. So we'll see what happens with ours, and we'll see if I can surprise you with anything that you haven't seen, because
you usually do, but I may surprise you.
Sure. Yeah, sure. All right, we'll work on that. I'll see you
next
soon.
Week.
Bye.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.